originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. An intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who took Derby 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pradnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano. A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm your host, retired jockey Christina McManigal, and I am joining you from our Jimmy John's of Lexington, Kentucky studio. Would like to thank everyone listening tonight on Sirius 219, XM 206, and also to those of you tuning into our website at www.horseracingradio.net. A portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. I'm one of the lucky ones. I was able to walk away from the sport, but not all of those riders can. The PDJF provides financial assistance to former riders who have suffered devastating on-track injuries. If you're able to help, please visit their website, www.pdjf.org. So we have a fresh face joining us on Jock Talk tonight. He just recently became a journeyman rider, but he's quickly making a name for himself here on the Kentucky circuit with multiple win days at Ellis Park and Churchill. His story is just beginning, but I can't wait to hear it. With 43 wins and counting and over $1 million in earnings, jockey Rayan Gazeter, welcome to Jock Talk.
Thank you.
Grant, so good to have you here on the show. And as I mentioned, you're a new rider. You're just starting out. You just lost your bug. But how we usually do these shows, we talk about how you got involved in this great sport to begin with. So tell us a little bit about where you came from.
Well, I'm originally from Florida. I was born in Miami, but we moved from Miami to Ocala when I was about 10 years old, and my dad, he was a jockey, and he was going through a spill, and unfortunately, he wasn't able to ride anymore, and he got a little farm, and that's where I learned how to ride. He taught me how to ride on the farm, and from there on, you know, I had to finish school first. I went to the track. I seen what it was all about. I mean, I didn't really know much about the race industry, but I learned quickly, and, you know, I caught along, and, you know, I tried to learn as much as I could, and from there on, you know, I got my my gate card in Florida at Gulfstream Park, and you know, I was listening to all the older jocks there, you know, trying to learn as much as I could, and from there it kind of just went along. But you know, I had a major setback in the beginning of my career. I got in a car accident, and you know, that really took a lot out of me. But I was so eager to ride, you know, I jumped back on it as soon as I could. And from there, you know, I've been on a journey. I went to New York for a little while. I didn't do so good in New York, but I'd say, you know, I learned a lot in New York. It took me a long way. You know, I made it here to Kentucky, and I had a, you know, major opportunity with Ronnie Ebanks. And, you know, he brought in my horizon, and, you know, I'm very grateful for that. And, you know, I stick to what I do, you know, I love it, and you know, I try to stay focused, and I'm committed, you know, I'm dedicated, and I'm determined, you know, and that's what I think it's all about.
So your dad rode races as well. You said he was recovering from a spill when you all moved to Ocala. So you knew what you were getting into, basically. You knew about the dangers of the sport and the hard times that your dad had to go through, and that didn't dissuade you from getting involved. Obviously, you were gung-ho for riding.
You're right.
Now, your dad, did he ride mostly here in the States?
No, he rode in Jamaica.
Jamaica.
That's where my parents are from. Yep.
Have you been to Jamaica yourself?
Yes, I have. I've been to Jamaica maybe 6 times, but mainly when I was younger.
What did you think of it there?
Well, you know, I like the island and the beaches. It's very beautiful, and a lot of my my family is there. But I mean, I don't know. I like to go there for vacation sometimes. But yeah.
Do you know a lot about racing in Jamaica?
Actually, I do not.
But your dad had quite a bit of success there, did he not?
Yes. Yes, he did. I think he was the leading apprentice there in Jamaica. He won, like, a bunch of awards and a lot of awards and trophies and stuff. But I don't really – because I was so young at the time when my dad was riding, I never really got to know, like, really much about my dad's career in riding. But I know he did really good in Jamaica in his career. That's what he told me, and, you know, I've heard it from – you know, friends of his, and he's got a well-known name in the track in Florida. And he's currently training now in Florida, but yeah.
And what's your dad's name?
Daniel Gazeter.
Daniel Gazeter. And when he had that spill you mentioned when you moved to Ocala, where was that at? What exactly happened to your dad?
Well, I think my dad was breezing a horse in the morning at Calder, and I think the horse went down, and something in his neck, his back, his spine went out of line, and none of the doctors could tell what it was. They thought his heart was enlarged and all this kind of stuff. He had high blood pressure. He was going through a lot. He could barely move. He was getting really, I thought my dad was going to pass away when I was younger, mm-hmm. but fortunately, we found someone in Ocala when we moved that was really good at what he did, and he took a look at my dad. You know, he said, you know, your back's out of line, and he fixed him up. You know, ever since then, my dad came right back around, but the riding has definitely left him behind.
Wow.
He got too heavy, and he can't do it anymore.
But he enjoys training, and you mentioned that was really your introduction there at the farm in Ocala. And would you help him out when you were a young boy with the farm, mucking out stalls, taking care of the horses?
Yes, I did. So much.
So much.
I helped him build the barn. Wow. I helped him, you know, with the horses. He broke some 2-year-olds. I was there helping. I got on the 2-year-olds, and, you know, that's where I learned to ride. I learned most of everything there, my balance, everything.
And how old were you when you first started really riding, breaking these young babies and things like that? How
Maybe
old were you?
11 or 10 or 11 years old.
10 or 11. Wow. And
yeah.
What was the biggest piece of advice your dad gave you when it came to dealing with the younger horses?
My dad, the biggest advice he gave me was to always be focused and be alert at all times, because you can never know what the horse is going to do, or you just have to be alert, you know, to be ready for whatever the horse is going to throw your way. That's pretty much what, you know, he made clear to me.
Babies can be challenging to ride and break, for sure. And do you think that helped you in your riding by learning on those young horses?
Yes, it definitely did. It gave me a lot of balance and you know, I mean, the things that I see a lot of people struggle with some stuff on the track, but like I learned a lot from that, like my dad teaching me just to be alert. Like some people like let go and not really like pay attention too much, but you know, that's a major thing. Like paying attention and being alert on the horses is so, so important, because you never, never know what they're going to do. But yes, I think it has definitely made an impact on my life on the horses, being alert on the horses. And yeah.
And did you know at that young age, Ryan, at 10 or 11 years old, that you wanted to make this your life?
Yes, I did. You know, it was always there, and I knew it was, because I was the only one in my family that, you know, was with the right height and weight, and all my brothers are bigger than me, and, you know, I just knew it was going to happen, and I just went for it.
What kind of a kid were you growing up? Other than working in the barn, were you good at school? Did you play in sports?
Well, I played soccer for a little bit. I always wanted to play football, but I never got into it. But I was always an outside kid riding dirt bikes in the woods. My parents would always get mad at me because I'm always outside, never in the house. They can never keep up with me. And I was just always doing things fast, you know?
I get it. And you said you grew up, you had a couple of brothers?
Yeah, I have three brothers and one younger. Oh, no, two younger, one older. And I have a sister. She's 1 year older.
And do they work in the racing industry at all?
No, they do not. All my families went through school, and, you know, my brother's becoming a chemist. My sister's a nurse. My younger brother's, I think he's going to pursue the music industry. And my other brother, he's you know, doing his own business. So everybody's, you know, doing their own thing. They're not in the horse racing thing, but my dad and me, we really pursue the horse racing.
What did your dad think when it became clear to him that you wanted to follow his path, that you wanted to become a jockey? What did he think about that?
Well, you know, he was really happy. You know, that's what he always wanted for me from a younger age, and that's how it went. And he was very happy, and ever since I've been riding, he's always been, you know, so proud of me. And he can't stop. Like, he's always telling me he's so proud of me.
What about your mom? Does she worry about you ever?
Oh, man, my mom did not want me to do it. She was totally against it.
Totally against it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, my mother's worry, and it is, as you know, a very dangerous career choice. But obviously your dad was on board and helped you as much as he could. And
yes.
When you got older, what kind of path did you take? Were you still working on the farm, say, out of high school? Were you still working with your dad on the farm, or where did you go from there?
Straight to the track. I went straight to Miami and started getting on a track. And from there, I really started breeding horses and getting the timing down, the horses, and just learning a lot more about the horses and racing.
And what track was that, Gulfstream?
Yes, Gulfstream. Well, first I went to Calder, but that's known as Gulfstream Park West now. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, that's where I was starting out, and then we moved on over to Gulfstream.
And how long did you work there at the track, galloping horses in the morning, before you decided you were ready to start riding races?
About 4 to 5 months before I started getting on, like, racing, yeah.
And who did you work for?
A couple of my dad's friends, because my dad was training horses at the time, too, and he was really trying to push me out there, get me going. And I got a little agent at the time, and, you know, it was a little hard starting out, but I did it, and I came a long ways, I'd say, and, you know, yeah.
And did your dad think that you were ready when you decided you were ready to start riding races? Did he agree with you on that?
Oh, yeah, he definitely did. I mean, I know a lot of other people were kind of telling me, you know, you got to take it step by step patiently. But my dad, he said everything would come along. You know, I'll learn it all. And he just knew I had the balance. He knew I could do it. And he believed in me so much. You know, even when I didn't believe in myself, my dad believed in me, and he pushed me out there, and it worked out. I mean, I learned it. I learned it all, and I caught along.
And when did you ride my
first race? It was sometime in October 2015. October, yeah.
And where was that at?
And that was at Gulfstream Park West.
And do you remember what that was like, Ray? And I remember my first race. It seemed like everything happened so fast.
Yes.
And it was over
so
before
right.
You even knew it.
Yeah. The gates opened, you know, I was hanging on, and it was over before you knew it. But I rode my first race for my dad on a horse that, you know, he owned. I think, yeah, him or a close friend owned. And his name was Rocky's Home Run. I ran third. But it was pretty fast experience. It was fast for my first time, yeah, like you said.
It's definitely different than just breezing horses in the morning. And preparing for that very first race, Rand, did you have to really get your weight down, or were you going to the gym, or describe to us what you did to prepare for that first race?
Well, I never struggled with my weight, but I was always in the gym because, I was always in the gym. I didn't have my accident yet. I was maybe 8 races in before I had my car accident, and but I was always in the gym. I was always practicing. I was always on the Equisizer. That was the number one thing. I was always on the Equisizer, you know, just practicing, getting my stamina up, and that pretty much led me to the race.
And the folks listening, they might not exactly know what an Equisizer is. So tell us what that is and why it's good.
The Equisizer is pretty much a wooden horse that, you know, it like pretty much does the same thing like that a horse like does. It, the head moves and everything, and it works on your legs, you know, your arms, and it teaches you how to, you know, hold the reins good and switch the whips, and it just gives you a lot of with your hands, like with the reins, you learn so much.
Would you watch races while you were on the Equisizer?
Yes, I would, and I would try to like do the same thing the jockeys did. I watched a lot of races and just learned as much as I could.
And who were some of the riders that you looked up to that you would watch and you would try to copy their style? Who were some of those riders?
Well, at the time, I mainly watched the riders at the track I was at, and Edgar Zayas stood out and Tyler Gaffalione. But some of the bigger riders that came in that I really liked was Lewis Zayas. I like his style, and I always try to, you know, go that in that direction, like try to copy them. You know, people say to pick a rider and you know, copy his style and stick to that style. And just pursue that style, and that's what I try to do. You know, stick to one style.
What is that style that you're trying to copy?
Well, I mean, just the way they look on a horse. I try to look the same way, and you know, do the same and be in the same rhythm, hit like around the same time. And you know, it's pretty much I react from what the horse does. So when a horse does something and I see how the other riders, you know, react to what the horse does, and I try to do the same thing. Like if a horse was to get out, you know, I'd try to be as fast as I could and just, you know, do it in the rhythm and the way they do it, you know?
And style,
just like that. The way they whip.
And the way they look on a horse, would you say they get low on the horse? What would you say?
Yes. Definitely getting low, getting down, and just getting in rhythm with the horse, and just like that.
And so during that first race, were you thinking of all of these things when you turn for home and you're getting after the horse, trying to get up? You mentioned you finished third that day. Are you thinking of all these different things while you're riding the race?
I was trying to do as much as I could. I mean, it was my first time, and I accidentally put the dark goggles on top, and I didn't realize. And when I pulled it down, I thought all my goggles fell down, and it kind of shocked me for a second. But when I realized, you know, I tried to get back into it, and I think I did pretty good for my first race. But I tried to do all the things that I practiced on Equisizer. Definitely.
It's funny, Ray, and there are so many things that you don't really realize go into riding, like you mentioned the goggles and small things like that you don't realize until you're in those irons in the starting gate for the very first time. And you mentioned the dark goggles, which are like sunglasses when it's a bright sunny day, and you know, if it's a sloppy day, you have to have 5 pairs of goggles on, and so many little things like that. I remember early on in my own career, Ryan, I was in the starting gate, and it was a sloppy day, and I completely forgot to put my goggles down, so that was interesting.
Oh, boy.
At least you didn't do that. Silly things that we don't think about, people don't think about on the outside looking in anyways. But so you finished your first race. And how old were you, by the way, when you rode your first race?
When I rode my first race, I was 19 years old.
19 years old. And you had finished high school at this time?
Yes, I did. I was out of high school.
And then at this point, you have your agent working for you, and you're hustling the barns in the morning trying to go after new mounts. And how hard is that when you're just starting out? How hard is it to convince a trainer to give you a shot?
It is extremely hard, especially being a new person that nobody's ever seen. I mean, these guys, there's a lot, you know, a lot of investments on the line, and, you know, it's hard. But once they see you out there consistently, they know you want it, I think that's when it really starts. You start building that relationship, and it becomes a little bit easier. But you work your way up. That's pretty much, you know, how I had to do it. But it is hard. It is tough.
And how important is it to have a good agent?
I'd say it's really important. You know, your agent, he manages everything for you. And, you know, if you don't have someone managing you and looking out for you out there, it's going to be a mess. And your business, it's really important to have a really good agent because, you know, business-wise, you know, the agent looks up the horses you're on, makes sure, you know, with the trainers and keeps contact with the trainers and make sure if, you know, you're late for somewhere, they get a hold of the trainers, they let the trainers know what's going on. And it's really important for the business because you could lose a lot of business if you don't have communication, good communication. And having a good agent is having good communication.
Joggy Ryan Gazeter joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Ryan, how long did it take you for you to win your first race?
Oh, to win my first race, I think I rode maybe a little over 30 races.
Was it frustrating at all for you? Did you feel like it was taking a long time? Or
it was a little frustrating. I felt like it was taking a little bit of a long time. But that I think it was for the fact that I got in a big, bad car accident, and it slowed me down. I mean, I was out riding for like 6 months. And when I came back, I was really, you know, anticipating riding, and I rushed into it a little bit too fast. And, you know, it took me a little while to get going, get my strength back. But once I did, you know, I eventually won my first race. And it did take a little bit, but it did get a little frustrating. But I won my first race. And when I got that one out of the way, I just kept on looking for the next one.
You mentioned the car wreck. And
yes.
It must have been pretty bad for you to be out for 6 months. What happened?
Well, I tore my diaphragm. I broke 3 ribs. I fractured my pelvic, and I my spleen. I lacerated my spleen and bruised all my internal organs, and my lungs collapsed, both of them twice. So it's pretty bad.
Usually, when I interview jockeys on this show, Ryan, that's due to riding injuries. You had a car wreck, which sounds just horrible. Lungs collapsed and everything.
Yeah.
Like that. So what happened in the actual car wreck? Did you hit someone else, or
well,
someone hit you? Or
no, I was driving home from work one day. The road was wet, and it's in Miami, and you know, there's a lot of cars that drive on the road there, and the roads are very slippery because of all the oil. And I had extremely bad tires at the time, and I was on a donut, which made it 10 times worse. Mm. And I was going around a turn, and my car picked up a little skid, and it just went out of control, and I couldn't control it, and it ran off the road and hit a guardrail, which hit me right in the door side, and there's nothing much I could have done about it, you know.
Wow, you're lucky.
I wasn't really going too fast. It was just a little freak accident, and it set me back for a while. Yeah.
Well, you're lucky to be alive, Ryan. That sounds
yes,
like a very...
Yes, I am. Thank God, yeah.
Yeah. Scary, scary accident there for sure. And it took you 6 months then. So obviously you were in the hospital for a while with collapsed lungs and everything
yeah.
like that. And while you're in the hospital, I'm sure you were just itching to get back to the track.
I was. I mean, I missed my dad, and I missed everybody at the track. I missed my family, like my brothers and everybody. And I just missed my, you know, being the kid I was. I was such an athletic kid outside, outdoors, and being stuck in one room for the whole month and a half was you know, frustrating. I just wanted to get back out to the way I was before. It was heartbreaking. Definitely it was. And I wanted to get back so much.
What was the recovery like?
Well, it took me a little while, but I had to wait 2 months before I could even lift anything up. And I could barely walk because of my pelvic. So it was very tough, but, you know, I was dedicated. And as soon as I could get into the gym, I started going to the gym. I had a gym routine I stick to, and I just built myself back up. And I built all my strength back up, and, you know, I was really focused. I wanted to get back to riding, and that's what I did. I did everything I could to get back to riding.
You mentioned the gym routine. What would you do in the gym?
Well, legs is a major key in riding, and your triceps, because you got to push. So I do a lot of tricep exercises, leg workouts, and, you know, I do a lot of I couldn't run at the time, so I did the bicycle machine a lot because my pelvic, it was a major setback for that. So I did that, and I did a lot of cardio and weightlifting. So just all around building all my muscles back up, because it took a lot. Because I went from 103 pounds when I went into the hospital all the way down to 85 pounds. So I was really trying to put on, you know, mass back pretty much everywhere I could.
85 pounds. Wow.
Yes.
Well, folks, we will continue our visit with jockey Ryan Gassner after this short commercial break. Stay with us. You are listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, but the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
This is CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. Jose Ortiz had a great week, highlighted by wins in two Grade 1 stakes races at Belmont Park. Ortiz started with a win in the Frisette aboard Separation of Powers and followed that up in the next race with a win in the Flower Bowl aboard War Flag. Ortiz finished the week second North American earnings with 6 wins, 5 seconds, and 9 thirds from 31 mounts. Kent DeSormo won 4 stakes races at Santa Anita, highlighted by a win in the Grade 1 Santa Anita Sprint Championship aboard Roy H. DeSormo returned on Columbus Day to win 3 out of his 4 mounts, including the Zuma Beach Stakes and the Surfer Girl Stakes. DeSormo finished the week with 7 wins, 3 seconds, and 2 third-place finishes from 21 mounts. Keeneland's leading rider, Julian Leperoux, continued his hot streak as he won the Grade 1 Darley Alcibiades aboard Heavenly Love on Friday and the Dixiana Bourbon aboard Flame Away on Sunday. Leperoux finished with 7 wins, 2 seconds, and 1 third-place finish. Finally, Irad Ortiz Jr. had a great week in New York as he won 3 stakes races, including 2 Grade 1s at Belmont. Ortiz punched his ticket to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile by winning the Champagne aboard Frenzy Fire. 2 races later, Ortiz would go wire-to-wire aboard Diversify in the Jockey Club Gold Cup, earning a spot in the Breeders' Cup Classic. Ortiz finished the week with 12 wins, 6 seconds, and 5 third-place finishes. John Parada's newest book, Half a Chance, is available now at JockeyTalk360.com and for Kindle at Amazon.com. Half a Chance is the story of a down-on-his-luck jockey agent who finds himself entangled in a web of deceit and larceny and provides the kind of entertaining read that is ideal for any racing fan. Visit JockeyTalk360.com for more information. This has been CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 Weekly Update. For all of the latest news in the jockey world, visit JockeyTalk360.com and follow us on Twitter at JockeyTalk.
This is Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm your host, Christina McManigle, and I am joined tonight by jockey Ryan Gassner. And Ryan, before we left for break, you were describing to us your recovery process after your horrific car accident. You told us that you dropped down to, 85 pounds, which is incredibly light, and you were working to gain that muscle back. And how long did it take you to recover well enough to start getting on horses again?
Well, it took about 6 months. Well, about 5 months. About 4.5 months before I could get on a horse. And one of the major problems was I couldn't eat. I had a problem with my stomach and the food going through my stomach from 1.5 to the next half. And that was the major, major, major problem in putting back on the weight. And, you know, I still have a problem putting on the weight, but I'm very dedicated. And, yeah, about 4.5 months it took before I could get on a horse and, you know, move along in my career.
I gotta say, Ryan, that's a problem most jockeys don't have, putting on weight. But thankfully, you don't have to worry about losing weight. But obviously, it was a struggle to get your health back to what it should be. And do you feel like you maybe rushed too soon to get back on horses, or you gave yourself enough time?
I felt like I did rush myself back in. I possibly could have waited an extra 3 months or 4 months even to before riding a race again, because I really needed to, you know, put on some more muscle, because I really did rush into it, to be honest. I did. And I needed the extra muscle for sure.
And then when you first started getting on horses again, did you feel sore or did you feel strong, ready to go?
No, I definitely did feel sore.
Yeah.
It did take a little bit before I, you know, I got back fit, race fit. And, I felt like I could have put on the weight, put on a lot more weight before I started riding again. It would have definitely helped a lot.
But, hey, you got back in the saddle and you started to get in that groove again and hustling for mounts. And where did your career take you from there?
Well, I started hustling mounts, and there was by the time I started riding, it was around May of 2016, and I won the 5 races pretty fast. And by the time, you know, I kind of hit a little plateau, and by the time, you know, the winter meet was coming up for Gulfstream, and I figured all the big jocks was coming and I wasn't going to have much opportunity. So I took a move to New York, you know, hoping it would be for the best. But New York didn't really work out too well for me, you know. I didn't really make too much money there. I didn't win too many races. But I learned a lot, and I really did get back into the gym in New York. I really, you know, focused on eating and getting that weight on. And once I finally did, I really, really noticed a big difference in my riding. And from there on, you know, I left New York about after 3 months of being in New York. I came here to Kentucky, and, you know, everything's been going uphill from there.
You said you learned a lot in New York. What did you learn?
I learned a lot about pace, being, you know, patient, being knowing when to move, and a lot about race riding. I really did learn a lot.
And describe to our audience how you developed that internal clock, that pace in your head.
Well, you know, I really get a feel for the stride of the horse, and I really, you know, have a feel of how far the pole is away from me, and I can feel how quickly it's coming up and how quickly we are like the horses are moving, you know? And also with the wind, you know, I could just feel it, how fast, you know, get a good sense of the pace of how fast I'm going. And I breeze a lot of horses in New York, more than I've ever breezed in my career. And I think that took a big toll on, you know, me learning pace. And, you know, yeah, ever since then, I've been getting a lot better with it.
And then you decided to move to Kentucky. And
yep.
What really prompted you to go to Kentucky specifically?
Well, I knew Ronnie was a good agent. I heard a lot about him, and I just took the opportunity. You know, I said it might be for the better, it might be for the worse, but, you know, I went for it. And it turned out to be really good because, you know, I met a lot of new people, and my name's been going around, and I think that, you know, here, I love it in Kentucky, to be honest. I love the people. The people are so nice. And I love how it's so laid back here in Kentucky. It's just like home in Ocala, and everyone's so nice. So I get along with everyone here real well. And, you know, I made a lot of great connections with the trainers, and a lot of connections with the trainers and stuff like that. And, you know, I really like it here, and it really did. It really was for the best coming here to Kentucky for me, I believe.
When you first got to Kentucky, did you find that you took off immediately, or did it take some time to get your name out there to the trainers? Or
it did take a little bit of time, but, you know, like I said, I was in this business, your new face, nobody knows who you are really. And it did take a little bit, but once the trainers started seeing that how I was riding and I was dedicated, and I was focused, and I was determined. I was there every morning. You know, I'd be there early, you know, checking, you know, saying, you know, is there anything I can do for you? You know, being there, you know, letting them see me and letting them know I was, you know, determined to do this. You know, that's what I wanted to do. And they seen the interest, and they, you know, it sparked. And here, you know, here I am. Everything's taken off. Everything's going great. Definitely. And, you know, I'm just keep looking for the next winner.
So what it's all about, right, Ryan? And
yeah.
You had a great summer at Ellis Park and then the short fall meet at Churchill Downs. And do you find that you're still learning?
Yes, I do find I'm still learning. I think in this business, you learn something new every day. I mean, you know, I'm consistently learning. That's yeah, I am.
Who are some of the Kentucky riders that you look up to?
Well, one of the biggest riders I look up to is John Court. He's, you know, he stuck up for me. He taught me a lot. He's always been there for me, and, you know, I really like that. You know, as an older jock, he teaches me, you know, at certain things in the races. He sees that I'm doing wrong. You know, he'll tell me, you know, what I'm doing, and he'll show me what I should be doing, and he takes his time with me, and I really like that, you know, about him, and I really do look up to him as an older rider. And a couple other riders I really do like that I like how they look on a horse is Joe Rocco. You know, I like how his style is, and I really do like Julian Leperu. He's a really smart rider. You know, I got to throw that out there too. And you know, I look up to these riders, and I like them. You know, a lot. They took me in. You know, they didn't really give me too much of a hard time, but yeah, they took me in, and you know, I really do like this circuit and with these riders, I do.
Describe that atmosphere in the jocks room, because it's very unique in that you're there with all of your competitors, but you're also looking to them for advice and to help you out a little bit. Describe what that's like in the jocks room.
Well, you know, everybody's really doing their own thing, being, you know, like looking into the program, the racing form, and really, you know, concentrating on riding. But, like, yeah, looking up to them, I go out there and I concentrate on riding. We're all friends when we come back in, but when we go out there, you know, we're all, like, looking towards winning, you know, every man for themselves. But we do look out for each other out there. You know, everybody's got to look out for each other. But like I said, every man for themselves to the winner for winning, because everybody wants to win. But, coming back to the room, you know, they treat me very well. Everybody treats me very well, very respectfully, and, you know, I like that. And everybody teaches me, you know. And, yeah, we have fun. We have fun in the jocks room, you know. But, yeah, it's a nice atmosphere with those jocks.
Tell us a little bit about what they've pointed out to you that's helped you greatly.
Well, a little bit what they pointed out to me was, you know, they taught me about when I'm in front, not to move too soon. When you have a lot of horse, you know, just take a breather, you know, relax and, you know, just relax and just make a move, you know, right when you feel like the move needs to be. Don't, like, move too early. That's what they taught me, the main thing they taught me, not to move too early. And, you know, I've learned a lot from them. They taught me that, and they taught me to control my horse. Like, oh, well, there's a lot that goes in it before that. Is the way, you know, you sit on the horse before the race, you know, calming the horse down. They taught me a lot how to calm the horse down, you know, be patient on the horse. A lot of that they've taught me.
Jockey Ryan Gassner joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So you mentioned the jocks are in the room handicapping and preparing for a race. How do you prepare for a race?
Well, I like to stretch. Well, I like to get to the races about 2.5 hours before, get a good stretch in, and then, you know, read my program and you get to learn the horses in the race and, you know, how to ride my race. And that's pretty much how I like to do it, get there early and get a nice stretch in and get ready for my races.
Do you watch a lot of replays or study the form?
Yes, I do. I watch the replays of the horses that I'm riding, like a couple of the past replays of the runs that they've ran, and I like to watch how they run, see if they run better on the outside, see how they react in the race replays on the inside. You know, pretty much I like to take a look at all those things.
And do you feel like it's an advantage when you're used to a particular jockey colony and you can kind of handicap what the other jockeys typically do as well?
Yes, I think that is a big advantage. When you know the riders, you know how they ride, you can anticipate certain things and it will fall in the line, certain things. So yes, I do think that is a major, you know, key, riding with riders that you know what they're going to do sometimes. Yeah, it's an advantage.
And what would you say someone would describe your riding style like? Would you say they would describe you as more of a speed rider or more of a come-from-behind patient rider? What would they say?
I'd say I'm more of a come-from-behind. I love coming. I really can rate the horses in front of me and make a good run. And that's the way, you know, I've got a lot of compliments, you know, that, you know, I did a good job bringing that horse along. And I think that, yeah, I get more of compliments that I'm off the pace, coming off the pace, coming on rider, you know?
Well, I don't know about you, Ryan. I always found that was such a greater adrenaline rush when you're passing horses left and right, turning
yes.
for home. And it's a good feeling.
Yes, I do. I love it. I love that feeling.
Definitely a greatest thrill I've experienced. I know that for sure. And you gave us a small example of what you do when you're preparing for a race and you get to the track early and you handicap and you watch replays. But now, Ryan, take us through a typical day from morning workers to end of the races.
To end of the races, well, for morning workers, I'll get up early in the morning, you know, check the train. If I don't have any work, I'll check the trainers, you know, make the rounds. And, you know, if I have workers, I'll work my horses. I'll come back home. And if I have enough time to where I can get a little nap in, I like to get a little nap in. And then get some food in me. And then I'll take a little nap. If I can get a nap in and get the 2 hours before that I need to stretch and prepare for my races and read up, you know, and look up on the watch them on the phone and see how my horses like to run and get ready to ride the horses the way they need to be ridden. And after the races, I like to go get something to eat, wait for a little bit, relax, and hit the gym. I always like to hit the gym before I go to bed. It puts me right to sleep, and, you know, it makes me ready for the next day.
So after you've ridden all day long, you go to the gym afterwards?
Yes, I do. I do. And it keeps me busy, you know? I like to stay focused on what I'm doing, and I like to stay proactive.
That's incredible. You keep busy. That's you're determined.
Yeah. Yes, I am.
Ryan, what would you say are the best and worst parts of this job?
The best part, I'd say, is the thrill of winning, because I cannot get over that. Every time I win, I just love the thrill of winning. But the worst part is the downfall, you know, the side to where, you know, you fall. There's always that thought, if you fall, if you get hurt, you know, that's what I would say the worst part about this business is.
And how do you go out there and not focus on that, not focus on the dangerous aspects of the job? Obviously, you can't really think about it too much.
Yes, the thought is there, but I always pray before every race, and I look up to God, you know, I ask him for, you know, like, I ask him to keep me safe and keep all the other riders safe, you know, to give us a heart of compassion, a mind of wisdom, you know, for all the jockeys. You know, I pray for everybody, and, you know, I pray for, you know, not only the jockeys, but, you know, the people in the gates, the gate crew, and, I, you know, I pray for everybody before every race, and, you know, that kind of helps me get my mind off of, you know, the downside, falling. It does. It gets me off. It gets my mind clear, and, it keeps me focused.
Who's your favorite horse you've ridden so far?
Oh, boy. My most favorite horse I've ridden so far is, I got to say, Dark Arden. That's my most favorite horse so far. He's yet to fail me. That horse, he's a runner.
What's his name again?
Dark Arden.
Dark Arden. And what have you guys accomplished together?
Well, I won 2 races on him back-to-back. And, you know, when I first started riding him, I noticed that that he was a little tough on the backside. I said, hey, let's make a change. And they made a change. Ever since then, that horse has been running for me. He's been relaxing, and he doesn't give up. He's so I just love how he runs. He's so into it, and he loves what he's doing. See, and that horse stands out to me. I got to say, that horse stands out to me.
When you have to feel like you were a big part of that, if you suggested the change that needed to happen, and how do you communicate that to a trainer? Say you jump off of a horse after a race, the horse didn't run so great. How do you give that information to the trainer?
Well, I start by saying, you know, I felt this. I kind of, you know, I felt this in the race, and, you know, I think that maybe this would help. I don't know, you know, what do you think about this? What did you see in the race? How did you feel about it? Did you see that this horse is doing this too? Did you see this? You know, because, you know, I feel one thing, but on the screen it could look like a total different thing. And the trainers, you know, they see these things and they know what's going on. So, you know, I kind of just work with the trainer and, you know, move along from there.
Not,
you know, tell them what I feel. Exactly.
Worked out well for Dark Arden, definitely. And,
yep. Yes, it did indeed.
Where did you ride him in?
I rode Dark Arden at Churchill, and I rode him in Ellis Park.
So you've ridden at Churchill, Ellis, Aqueduct, Gulfstream Park West. I'm sure I've left out several.
And I rode one at Tampa.
Tampa?
Yeah, I rode one.
And Indiana? You've been riding in Indiana?
Oh, yes, I rode in Indiana, too. Yep, I ride Indiana.
So out of all those racetracks, Ryan, which is your favorite?
My favorite out of all, I'd say Keeneland.
Oh,
Keeneland,
yes.
Is my favorite.
Yeah, I was
watching. It's so beautiful there. I love it.
I was watching the races just the other day, Ryan, and saw you just going to town on this horse. I think you got up for second And I think it was sloppy. I think that was just the other day.
Yes. Yes, it was. I think that was the most recent race I've ridden there. Yeah.
What is it about Keeneland that you love so much?
I just love the atmosphere. You know, the track is such a pretty track. It's so beautiful out there. And, you know, everybody's, you know, loves what they're doing out there. And you can, it's just the vibe. Everybody likes what they're doing out there. And everybody gets along well. And, you know, like, I just love the track. It's beautiful. And the people, there's so many people there. And it's just, I like it. I like where there's everybody there and everybody's loving the racing and, you know, everybody's getting along. I like it.
I mentioned that particular race I saw you ride was in the slop. And what challenges does that bring to you as a rider when you're riding in bad weather, it's raining, it's sloppy? What do you have to do to prepare for that?
Well, I'd like to, you know, get my goggles situated, you know, have enough goggles when I go out there and have everything prepared. But, you know, at the same time, I feel like going in, like you said, it's sloppy, it's wet. I feel like sometimes, you know, I like to put on gloves, you know, have a better control of the reins and things like that. You know, that helps out a lot.
Do you like watching the other races that are on that day to get a feel for how the track is playing?
Yes. Obviously, yep, of course. I do watch the next races before. If there is races before, if not, you know, you're the one out there first experience. But I do like to see, you know, whether the horses are running on the outside of the track, you know, middle of the track, where they're liking it the most. And if they're running from off the pace or in front, or, you know, that's what I look for. I look for those things.
So you're riding at Keeneland right now in the Kentucky circuit, right around here, Indiana.
Yep.
Where are you going from here?
Well, my plan for the winter is Oakland. So, yep, Oakland. This is going to be first for me. But that is the plan, Oakland.
Have you ever been there?
Nope, never been there.
What has made you decide to go to Oakland?
Well, most of the people I went for here at Churchill and Ellis, they're going to be going over to Oakland, most of them. So I figured, you know, it'd be a great opportunity to go to Oakland.
I think it's a little bit warmer in Oakland than staying up north, right?
Yeah. Boy, was New York cold.
Mm. I know. I hate riding in the cold. I'm not a fan of it.
Definitely not. I there's nothing worse than riding. You can't feel your toes.
It's the worst feeling ever. And then you jump down and your feet sting because they're numb, and it's not fun. I'll agree.
Yeah, it's rough.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah, not fun. Well, hopefully you won't have to deal with that too much at Oaklawn. And besides going to that particular track, what other future goals do you have for your career?
Well, I want to win big. I want to win stake races. I've yet to win a stake race. I've ridden in a few. And, you know, there's the big thing, you know, I want to win the Kentucky Derby, and it's always there. So I just look forward to winning as much as I can and winning some bigger races, you know, the greatest stakes and going along with my career.
Sounds like you have some good goals to achieve, Ryan. And as I mentioned in the introduction, you just recently lost your bug or your apprenticeship. Have you found that it's... You feel like there's more pressure on you now that you've lost that? Do you feel like it's tougher?
Well, I'd say so because, you know, the advantage isn't there anymore. But I still stick to being, you know, dedicated and focused. That's the key. I like to stay dedicated and focused. And no matter what, just always look up and, you know, It is, but yeah, I do feel like, you know, there's a little bit more pressure that came with losing the bug.
Well, and usually when a rider loses their bug, they're very happy that they can finally eat. But I guess you don't have that problem because you're a natural.
Yeah, I definitely don't have that problem.
Really quickly, Rain, we just have a couple minutes left. What do you eat on a typical day?
Oh, boy, I eat a cheeseburger sometimes. But I take a lot of protein. I try to eat healthy, you know. I eat a lot of food that's going to give me energy. And I do love Chick-fil-A. I got to put that out there. Chick-fil-A, I love the chicken. I try to eat as much as I can to gain the weight. But, I mean, I'm not too far off of the weight, so I pretty much eat anything I can.
So you eat a lot of protein, sounds like, and you're going to the gym, so, you know, doing as much as you can to build up that muscle, definitely, Ryan. And are you planning on coming back here to Kentucky after Oaklawn?
Yes, that will be the plan.
Does your family ever come up here to visit and watch you ride?
Well, my mom has, but ever since I left Florida, I've been on my own pretty much. My mom's came to visit me once, and my brother. But other than that, you know, everybody else is kind of busy themselves. But I'm sure whenever I'm in a big race and they get the chance, they'll come down to watch, or I'll, you know, get them up here.
Well, I'm sure you'll be winning big races very soon, Ryan. Thank you so much for joining us.
No, thank you. It's my pleasure.
Now, folks, if you missed any portion of tonight's show, you can check out our website, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. And while you're there, check out all of the other great shows you can listen to. Trainer Talk, Equine Forum, Express Bet Radio, the list goes on. And then join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Dallapina, I'm Christina McManigal, and thank you for listening.